Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Buddhang dhammang sanghang namassami. So according to the Satipatthana Sutta, anyone who practices properly for 7 days will be fully enlightened. We've already had 7 days of this meditation retreat. So which means if you're not enlightened yet, you haven't been practicing properly. So what does it mean to practice properly? Basically, when you have a 3-month retreat, it's much more gentle. You can actually relax and just ease yourself into the retreat period. And that's precisely what I hope each one of you have done. There have been little bits of business, loose ends to tie up, little things which go wrong. But little by little, as you go further into the retreat, those problems, difficulties tend to lessen. And you tend to get into a beautiful routine where you have lots of free time. Many of you already have that free time. And it's wonderful to have the opportunities where you have just most of the day for yourselves. However, when you do have such, you know, what I think is idyllic situations and circumstances, even though the externals can be just so clear of hindrances and obstacles, still, as you'll all find out, the biggest hindrance and obstacle is that which the mind presents to you. Whether it's the boredom or the restlessness, the sleepiness, or the frustration which happens when you have such a long time to meditate. It's important to give yourself that time to meditate, because unless you do have that solitude and that time to face the mind, you'll never understand that those obstacles exist in the first place. Know that sometimes it could be quite romantic to go off and be a hermit, be by yourself and have all the free time in the world. And this is about as close as you can get in our world. You know, in this monastery where you have so much support, where the huts are just well-positioned, well-built, comfortable, and everything is just so well-supplied in this monastery. So externally, you know, you can't have it much better anywhere in the world as far as places I've gone to. And even all of the teachings, if you don't like this teaching, there's so many tapes and CDs in the library there, that there's enough teachings there. All one really needs to do is actually to find the way to employ those teachings, to make use of the free time in a wise and skillful way. And one of the meditation techniques which I've been encouraging in talks overseas, and also settle myself down, is to spend a little bit more time on the mindfulness of the body. It's sometimes that, especially if I'm busy, or if you just had a birthday and it's just so disturbing, basically, having all these people around sort of telling you this and telling you that. So whenever you get disturbed, sometimes it's hard to settle down so quickly. And one of the ways I've been using to settle down, encouraging each one of you to do, is the mindfulness of the body technique, where instead of just going straight to present moment awareness or silence or straight to the breath or straight to metta meditation, whatever other types of meditation you do, is to sit down and just become aware of the sensations and feelings in your body. Sometimes you don't know whether to call that body meditation or vedanusati, you know, of the feelings, because it's the physical feelings in the body of the fifth sense of touch. But it's those physical feelings you get to know what your body is like and where it is and what's happening in your body. And I find it very, very useful, because perhaps that I haven't emphasized that, but I do it quite regularly, always have done it quite regularly, especially in times of tiredness or sickness. Because by focusing on those physical feelings, it's a time of giving ease, it's a way of giving ease to those physical feelings, to those tiredness. Or, you know, sometimes going without sleep because you've been traveling, to focus on the feelings and just sort of settle them down. Because it's not that hard to settle feelings down just by focusing on them. And what I've been calling in the talks in the last 6 months, using caring attention. caring attention is not just being mindful, but having a bit of gentleness and compassion as you look on those feelings. That's obviously metaphorical. You're not looking with your eyes. You're just being mindful with your mind. But not just knowing these things, but just being kind and gentle to them. And the kindness and gentleness, which is along with the mindfulness, tends not only to make it easy to engage with the object, but also it tends to calm and tranquilize the object. So in other words, if you have got aches in the knees, or you've got some sort of tension in the body, you find by that type of mindfulness, plus a little bit of compassion, it's easy enough to maintain your attention there. And of course, I find that very useful whenever you're doing things like walking meditation. If you're walking meditation for an hour or so, after a while, when my body starts to sort of, you know, get a bit hot, and maybe when you sit down, it's very little bit tired and achy. But that actually gives you a wonderful start to your meditation. You can focus on those feelings and sensations in the body after walking meditation. That stops the mind from drifting off somewhere else. Because as well as calming the body down from an active type of meditation called walking meditation to the inactive sitting, sometimes that's a beautiful way of making that transition without allowing the mind to go wander off into all the other duties and things which you should be doing, or dreams, plans or fantasies, which sometimes you've got nothing to do but you do it anyway. So it's a beautiful way of focusing and not losing the mindfulness. Because after walking meditation, those physical feelings, with me anyway, are very prominent. They're very, if you like, loud and very easy to focus on. And they make a wonderful way of taking the mindfulness from the walking into the sitting. And it's also nice if you have like a sore throat or an ache or a pain to focus on those feelings, and just with caring attention, it all settles down. And maybe that's one way of increasing your own bodily health while you're here. Sometimes that I'm a great believer, maybe because of the experience, by learning how to focus on sort of painful or sick feelings in the body and give it this caring attention, the aches or the pains or the sicknesses, in me anyway, tend to lessen. They seem to respond, not just to being aware of them, but to the kindness which I imbue in them. I know that sometimes we do chanting for people, and sometimes it works. It does seem to work anyway. This is why we've just done all this chanting and read out this list of names. And of course, it only really happens, it only really sort of works if when you're doing that chanting, you focus on some of those names and you spread loving kindness and metta towards them. And if that actually works when you chant on other people, imagine what that type of metta can do to yourself. Now, you are far closer to yourself, obviously. So by just spreading this caring attention to parts of your body, gee, that has a huge effect on you, physically. And sometimes, especially when you get deep meditation, your mind is very, very powerful. You can see it works. And some deep meditations, especially when you sit for many, many hours and you get disturbed by like an ache in the knee or something, because after a few hours my knees do start to get achy. And sometimes you can just focus on there. Just with kindness, you zap the feelings and they disappear straight away because your mind is just so strong. I say zap because basically that's the only way you can describe it. Just put your attention down there with some kindness and it just works almost immediately. And that's sort of with intense meditation, but even with a not so deep meditation, still the mind has enough power, or rather the mindfulness together with kindness. This is why I call it caring attention, not just mindfulness, but add that metta, that compassion with it. That seems to work really well. So during this retreat period, if any of you have sicknesses or aches or pains, which many of you have, we're all a year older than last retreat, and some people feel that maybe 2 or 3 years older. Sometimes that's not true, but that's how it feels. And if you are getting old and getting sick and getting close to your death, at least that's sometimes what it feels like, it's sometimes quite useful to have this little technique so you know how to deal the aches and pains in a way which not only tranquilizes them superficially, but actually tends to do some healing. And by doing that, you're not only creating a healthier body, but you're also learning how to develop more of this mindfulness together with caring. And that caring mindfulness will be of great benefit to you later on when you sort of start to sit and do things like watching your breath. Remember, just by watching the feelings in the body and caring about them, now you're actually practicing what I call this present moment awareness and silence, simply because the only feelings you can really know for sure are the ones which are here right now. It's a natural present moment awareness when you're watching these sensations in the body. And also, because you can't say too much about them, it's very hard to write an essay on the feelings in the body. When I was a trainee school teacher, you always do the trainee where you've got other teachers, you look and see how they do things, and then they let you teach their classes. There's one very eccentric school teacher in the north of England where I did my teaching practice, whose method of punishment if a child did anything wrong was to get them to write an essay and give them the most ridiculous subjects to write about. And his favourite subject was you had to write a 2-page essay on the nature of the inside of a ping pong ball, which was a very difficult to write anything about something so nothing. What is in on the inside of a ping pong ball? It's white and it's round, and maybe that's about it. But you had to write 2 pages. But that was like an example of something which you can't say too much about. And I use that example because when you look at the feelings in the body, they're just about maybe a little bit more interesting than the inside of a ping pong ball, but not much more interesting. In other words, there's not much you can describe about them. Words just don't go there. And we haven't got the language to describe these things sometimes. Sometimes a feeling, it hurts, or it's pain, it aches, but there's nothing much else you can say about it. And it's because that the feelings in the body do not engender conversations and concepts and language. They are a great method of calming the thinking mind down. You're getting in contact with the feelings rather than the thinking. And so it does become a very useful bridge, you know, between the outside world and the world of real present moment awareness and silence and with the breath. So by sitting down and staying with your feelings for a few minutes, you know, when you start your meditation, I found that very, very useful and a very good instruction to other people to get in contact with their bodies and to get in contact with the present moment and to get a little bit of silence in the mind, so not thinking or fantasizing or dreaming. And of course, I don't really do that very much, but some traditions, they do a huge amount of meditation on the body, sweeping it up and sweeping it down. And I found that also very useful to teach people who are very restless. That was one of the meditations I introduced at the retreat in Khao Lak, north of Phuket, 3 or 4 weeks ago. And they loved that because these were executives from Singapore, busy people, and they came there and they were so restless that giving them something to do like that really calmed their restless mind down. Go from the toes all the way up to their head slowly, meant just noticing the feelings as they went, gave them something to do. It was an active type of meditation, but it was focused and it was in the moment and there's not much thinking could go on. So by the end of the sweeping, they were actually quite calm, surprisingly so. And of course, those who knew how to do the further meditations carried on from there. And I was so pleased that some people got some nice meditation for the first time. And it's always a great joy as a teacher when people start to understand what meditation is like for the first time. It's so easy and I got so focused, couldn't hear anything. I was just really inside myself. It's so nice. And some of the people who get these are just some of the ones you least expect, but think, wow, wonderful, great. So it all started because they started to do some more body meditation. And seeing the results of that, I wanted to encourage it here as well. So to use that as another technique, don't just go and sit down there and just, okay, do nothing and fall asleep. Or just go and sit there and say present moment awareness and then start thinking about all sorts of stuff. try and sort of develop the body meditations, but it's not understanding the nature of the body. It's not going into thinking. That's a type of body contemplation I don't think is very useful until after you've got deep meditation. But like aware of the feelings in the body, really it should actually come underway Dhanasati. But it's the body as well, so who cares what it's actually called and where it's classified, it works. And I think you understand what I mean. And what that means is you get another beautiful technique of meditation to use during your long day. And when you have those different ways of meditating during the long day, you tend not to get bored. Especially the beginning of a retreat, because if you can sort of start to develop the present moment awareness and silence at the beginning, using things like meditation on the body, after a while the meditation starts to bite. You become naturally inclined to the present moment, naturally inclined towards silence. It's just a training of the mind, that's just how it works. The more you incline to one thing, now the more you train yourself, the more you do that naturally. In exactly the same way that I've seen people training on tennis courts, and they just, you know, do this forehand again and again and again, and their coach just hits the ball to the same parts of the court, and they just have to keep repeating the same action just innumerable times. And because they keep repeating the same action over and over and over and over and over and over and over again, it becomes habitual. And by developing this present moment awareness and silence long enough, it does become habitual. This is what we mean by training. So we train ourselves in these ways to actually to be more in the moment during this retreat period, to be more silent. And after a while, it bites. Now we are naturally more in the moment, we're naturally more silent, and just our mind inclines there. And of course the most important thing is that once you start to do this, you start to get happy. The meditation becomes joyful. It's the nature of the mind to do this. People start to get off on meditating. And I don't know how many times I've said this is one of the most important experiences in meditation, the joy, the happiness, the interest, the fun which comes in meditation, because that keeps you on the cushion, that keeps you from going crazy, that keeps you from going bored and out of your skull. What am I going to do next? I'm bored as hell. Gee, there's another 2.5 months and a few more days left of this retreat. How am I going to survive? And of course that happens because you're not getting any happiness in this meditation. When the happiness starts to come, say, wow, oh, another 2.5 months of this, oh, bliss. That's what happens. So again, to be able to get that joy in meditation, you have to not just use your willpower and your force and all of your aspirations and expectations. Remember just the physics of joy coming from stillness and understand the causes of this. So by doing body awareness, and especially caring awareness on your body, you're generating the ability to be alert, overseeing what you're doing, but also being a caring of what you're doing. So you're not so forceful and aggressive and critical and fault-finding. And so by developing the caring part, you know, you're getting beyond or avoiding sort of the negative and fault-finding part of the meditation, because that is what really creates a lot of problems for your meditation practice. Sometimes you get so negative that from the negativity we get bored. From the negativity we start these negative thoughts and arguments, and I can't do this, this is hopeless, the whole teaching is hopeless, the whole religion is hopeless, life is hopeless. All just starting from the generation of negativity. But caring attention just obviates that. Because you're caring attention, it's beautiful, like open mind, a gentle mind. In the same way you look at these feelings in the body, you just sort of massage them. In the same way that when you have any problems, even emotional problems or mental problems with a meditation, you can massage those problems rather than getting into them and making a huge, big negative problem out of these states of mind. So the caring is important, but the attention is also important because it's the supervisor. You see what you're doing, you see what you're up to, you understand the way the mind is moving. Because so often without that awareness and that mindfulness, you just don't know what the mind is doing. You can meditate for half an hour. What you've been doing for half an hour? You haven't really been watching. You've just been, you know, wandering this way, wandering that way, dreaming, fantasizing, falling asleep. Complete waste of time. And be careful, just because you sit for 2 hours or 3 hours, if that's unmindful meditation, in other words, you don't know what's going on, the mind's drifting all over the place, it's not very useful. It's much better to have half an hour of very on-the-ball meditation, where you really are paying attention. You know what you're doing. Even if you're doing it wrong, at least you know you're doing it, than sort of being sort of dull and sleepy. So by developing the awareness at the beginning with the feelings in the body, that part of meditation, that particular skill and strength of mind is being encouraged. So by the time you let go of the feelings in the body, the mindfulness is being encouraged and generated, it's sharp. So when you're watching, say, the present moment or watching the silence or you decide to watch the breath straight away, the mindfulness is there for you. So it can watch the breath, and if it starts to move away from the breath, you know it's starting to move away, so you can bring it back again. You know, this is what the mindfulness, which we call the gatekeeper. You know, that gatekeeper is something which is there, is watching for the enemies, allows what is supposed to come in to the building. You know that old simile I gave, the gatekeeper to the house is being told exactly who's allowed to go in and who the enemies are. But obviously, if that gatekeeper is half asleep, then all the instructions in the world of, you know, who the gatekeeper should allow into the building, who they should keep out, who are the friends, who are the enemies, if he's half asleep, then all the instructions in the world won't work. You've got to be an alert gatekeeper. But also, if you're an alert gatekeeper, but you haven't got the instructions, again, then it's not going to work. Now, you're fully aware, and you see the robbers going in, you see the robbers going out. Obviously, that's not a good gatekeeper. The gatekeeper has to be fully aware and alert, and also know the instructions. And this is what we develop by a bit of mindfulness on the body. The mindfulness gets very strong and aware. So it sees what's happening. It's like this being just overlooking what you're up to. And that's your mindfulness. And you can see which way you're going. And if you find that, you know, the care is not there or you're just drifting off, it can take remedial action. All you're having here is just the power, we call the indriya, of sati, of mindfulness. And it's important to build that up. Sometimes that one is tired and one does fall asleep, so one hasn't slept very much or you've eaten too much or you've been very busy, or sometimes you're just, your body goes through its things, you know, and that's not just women, men as well. You just go through your high energy stages and your low energy stages. It can be sicknesses, infections, who knows, but you know that sometimes you're just tired and that's it. And if it's not the time to sleep, at least you just sit there and make peace with your tiredness. Okay, you're not all that mindful, but please don't fight it when you know it's sort of, it's just physical. And if it really is just physical, you just sit there and you're not fighting because you're not wasting your energy in negativity. You're opening the door of your heart. You're being kind to your tiredness. The tiredness usually doesn't last that long. But some of the tiredness is just laziness. And I think that many of you have been here long enough and you know your practice well enough to know the difference when you're lazy and when you really are genuinely tired. And if it's really laziness, it just means you're not really developing the mindfulness. You're just allowing, out of probably negativity, just to go off into this escape, what you think is an escape from real life, the dullness of the mind. But for those of you who have got some wisdom, you know it's not a really nice escape. Dullness is not a very pleasant state. It's much better to develop a bit more of mindfulness by doing things like washing the body. And when that mindfulness is strong enough, you feel so much better. And you can watch the present moment, you can sort of watch the silence, you can watch the breath. You find you can meditate. And that obviously increases your self-esteem. You're much happier in this monastery because you become a meditator and you're happy that, yeah, I'm a monk, but I'm also a meditator. I can do it. And that's so important, especially for the people who start off here, the young monks, to know that, yeah, you can meditate and you can do it. Because once you realize you can, that gives you the courage, the encouragement, the motivation to take it deeper. Really, this meditation, the worst part of it, the difficult part, is just the first part of it, getting to things like full awareness of the breath or the beautiful breath. That's the tough part of meditation. And once you get to that stage, you know, full awareness of the breath or the beautiful breath, then you're off. You don't have to have a teacher to sort of keep teaching you. Well, sometimes you do, just to give you the precise instructions of what to do and how to take it deeper, because you're interested in now. You want to meditate. You're fascinated by the way that meditation works. And it becomes like a hobby, which you just can't spend enough time with, because you're getting fun out of it and it's interesting. But the first part of the meditation, that's the hard part, because that's dull, it's uninteresting. Sometimes it's a bit of hard work and sometimes you get frustrated. That's the difficult part. Once you get to this pivot point of meditation, beautiful breath or just full awareness of the breath even, then you're away. So you should make that your goal at the beginning of the meditation, to develop to that stage, and all the rest is like downhill. And have confidence that you can do it. And you know, all these teachings are there to help you. But the teaching of mindfulness is very important to begin with. You develop that mindfulness, this overseer. And it's not just when you're meditating or when you're walking. Sometimes you can develop that overseer throughout your day. When you're even eating your food, is someone actually watching you eat? And that's, you know, your mindfulness. So you're not thinking or you're not talking, especially those of you who take your food back to your huts. Now be careful to eat mindfully. You know, we always say that one spoon at a time. Or if you eat with your hands, just one handful at a time. So you don't sort of have one morsel in your mouth and another one on your spoon and another one heaped up, thinking what you're going to have as your fourth mouthful. Just one at a time. So keep a bit of mindfulness there. Or, you know, even you go into the toilet, don't take a book on the toilet with you. You know, just watch what it's like to excrete or whatever. And when you actually do things like that, you find that the mindfulness is established in the ordinary things of the day, which makes it much easier when you sit down on a cushion, on a stool or in a chair, to have that mindfulness in these things like the body and eventually the breath. So you're building up sort of the techniques which allow meditation to happen. And little by little, as you build up those, I call it the muscles of the mind, like kindness and like mindfulness and awareness, you find that meditation becomes far more easy. And when it comes more easy, you find you can actually sit there, you can calm the mind down. And a calm mind is such a beautiful, wonderful thing to have. Because you know the opposite, when the mind is just full of thoughts and it's wandering around, sooner or later we'll get into negativity. It's very hard to have a thinking mind which is always positive. The thinking mind always tends to degenerate into negativity and fault-finding. Just like some of the conversations we used to have on the tea time, you know what happens, we start talking about high things and sooner or later, you know, a group of blokes together, we always end up talking about stupid negative things. It's just like the degeneration of speech, and the same thing happens with the degeneration of thinking. It always seems actually to go into more fault-finding and negativity. So be careful of that. So the quieter you can become, the more one can have happiness in this monastery. So the whole goal or the inclination should always be like calming things down, calming it down with mindfulness and compassion and settling things, which is really what compassion is supposed to do. Now, kindness and compassion is trying to sort of smooth over the problems, to soothe the hurt, you know, to ease the disturbance out of kindness. And that degree of kindness is implicit in kindness, that it carries the role of samatha, of calming and pacifying things. It's the anger which tends to have the role of inciting and exciting and agitating people. And so you can understand that when you have the compassion, kindness along with the mindfulness, it does calm things down. It especially calms your body down, which is why that caring attention on your body tranquilizes the body, so the aches and pains and sometimes the restlessness which is in the muscles and bones of your body tend to disappear. But also, when you turn it onto your mind, this caring attention tends to soothe and calm the mind. All the difficulties and problems and the angst which you may have in your mind, with caring attention, saying, "Ah, never mind, it'll be all right. Don't have to worry about these things. You'll do it okay. It's only 2.5 months. It soon goes," whatever it is. You tend to sort of calm everything down. And in that calmness, you can get the freedom. The freedom from the tyranny of thought, the freedom from the pain of negativity. Negativity is such an awful place to live. And now you have the option in this retreat. Now you can turn the mind, to train the mind away from this negative fault-finding, angry, miserable, upset, depressed mind into something which is more peaceful and calm, which also has more energy. When you start to do this with caring attention to the present moment, you care for this moment. Because you care for the moment is not as bad. When you smile at someone, they smile back. When you care for them, they usually care back. And so if you care for this moment, it becomes a much nicer moment to care for. It's what you imbue with your attention is what you see in that object. So if you've got negativity, anything which you look at is just awful, negative, and it's so hard to stay with this moment because it's not nice. The reason it's not nice is because the way you're looking, and nothing to do with the present moment, it's the way you attend to it. So by having caring attention to the present moment, the caring part of it makes it easier to look at because the present moment becomes nicer, more pleasant. And when the present moment becomes a pleasant moment, it means that it's easy to watch. And you don't tend to have to go off into the past and future and get restless, because you're having a good time being now. The same with the silence, when you have care for the silence of the mind, the emptiness, the space between the words. It's beautiful. And because you care for it and attend to it, you can stay there. And now your meditation is building. And when it starts to build, you're getting somewhere, you feel good. You feel, wow, I really am a monk. Coming on this retreat as a layperson is really worthwhile. You can see results. And even though I keep telling people you're not supposed to meditate for results, of course we all want results and want to see something. So there's a nice result you can see. If you want the result, it never comes. But if you do the right things, put the causes in place, caring attention, results will come. And that gives you positive reinforcement. This meditation works, and also you can do it. And it feels so great and so wonderful. And that feeling of greatness, wonder, beauty, satisfaction, you're getting somewhere, starts to feel good. That just has, again, another snowball effect. And because of caring attention, you can do these things. And if I can do present moment awareness and silence, I can do this breath. And it does work. You can do it. You can watch this breath and just sit there and just watch the breath going in and out for hours. Well, maybe not hours. You usually get much deeper after a while. But you can watch it, say, for 10, 15 minutes, every in-breath, every out-breath. Because you know what the cause is to make that happen. Again, not so much willpower as the mindfulness, the care, knowing how the whole thing works. If you care for the breath, you really just have kindness towards it, and kindness towards yourself, and the mindfulness as well. The breath is nice and easy to watch. If you're angry towards the breath, you tense up and the breath becomes tense. Everybody knows that the breath, you know, its quality is a good reflection of the way your mind is. If you're, you know, very tense, the breath is tense. If you're angry, the breath is very shallow and fast. Whatever it is, you know, sometimes if people see a girl they like, they can hardly breathe. You can see just how your emotions of lust, ill will, or whatever really do affect your breathing, which is obviously well known. But when you're kind to the breath, you get the kind breath. It's so nice to watch. So when you have caring attention to your breath, it makes the meditation so much easier. You smile at the breath smiles back. It becomes pleasant. Once you start to get into the pleasant breath, you're on your way. Breath becomes so nice, just watch it go in, watch it go out. And for those of you who've heard me speak for such a long time, sometimes you get really bored hearing the same old things, but now you can do it. And you think, wow, alas, it's happening. I can do this meditation. I'm a meditator. I earn my rice or your potatoes, whatever you ate this morning. This is what lay people expect of me. This is what I ordained for. This is why I'm a monk, to develop and train my mind. And now I'm getting some results. I'm getting peaceful and nice. I can meditate. And the specter of a long retreat doesn't fill you with dread anymore, but fills you with, oh, wonderful, peace at last. It's like being on a holiday. May it really go slowly. I'm enjoying this. And then you're getting somewhere. When you have that sort of attitude, just the meditation just builds and grows and blossoms. You have the most wonderful time of your life. So that I always remember in those early years. Sometimes once you get the meditation going, it starts getting hot. You have a wonderful time on these retreats. It can't sort of last long enough. It always finishes far too quick. Sit there and just watch this breath. It just develops. The more you just watch this breath go in and go out, just the more still and peaceful you become. Remember, that's the whole point of the meditation, calming and stilling the mind. Don't go looking for insights and all these stupid ideas of thinking and trying to understand things. Understand stillness, that one thing, and see how much stillness you can create in the mind or allow to happen. Stillness, 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 stillness. And how silent you can become. There are great thinkers in this world, but I always think they're stupid. You know, they can think, but they don't really understand. There's very few people who can get their mind still and peaceful. So you'd be one of those few. The calm mind, which is so still that hardly anything is happening. And don't be afraid of some of the dullness which comes as a result of stillness. That dullness soon disappears. And the stillness becomes vibrant, powerful, and just so full of energy. And that still energy, that's the one to go for. You're absolutely unmoving. You've just got more energy than a nuclear reactor. So that's what it's like in the deep meditations. And you just go there gradually. As the mind does less, has more energy. So it comes that time, the mindfulness becomes incredibly powerful. And with the power, it just becomes so bright. It is caring, naturally. Energy, brightness, happiness has a natural compassion alongside of it. And that's when you really find it so easy to go deep into the meditations. beautiful breath, having a wonderful time. Just so gentle, so kind, so accepting, so still. You don't need to think your way through. The pivot point means that once you're on that side of the mountain, it's all downhill. You don't need to climb, you don't need to put forth effort. Now, the more you let go, the better it happens. And this is when that ability just to really let go of the doer, the controller, the thinker, the maker, is imperative. Stage of either full awareness of the breath or beautiful breath, try each and see what happens. And you get deeper and deeper in your meditations, have a great time. And also, you go back into those books, you look what the Buddha said, and you see you're doing it. Just as the Buddha described, so it is in your experience, in your mind. Then you become a real monk. A monk who doesn't just wear the outer robes, but a monk who really understands what the Buddha taught and how the Buddha lived. Not how he lived by keeping his rules and precepts, but how he lived by calming his mind, his mental faculties. Becomes so still and so peaceful and so beautiful. And that comes out in just your health, your attitudes, in your life. You become a happier, more effective human being. And all the energy, all the wisdom, all the compassion, all the understanding experiences you get in this retreat, eventually you'll be able to share whenever you become a teacher, or just by being who you are with your friends and companions in the holy life, or the lay people who support you. It's well worthwhile doing. You can be here for 3 months. So do it properly. All these teachings are here to help you. The facilities are here to facilitate it, to make it easy. And so when you are meditating, try a bit more of the body awareness. By being compassionately mindful, caring attention to your body as a stepping stone into just being caringly attentive to your mind, to your breath, and then into the deep meditations. So that's the talk this evening on body awareness.
Satipatthano Bhagavato